Now, here is an exclusive interview conducted by Michael Toms with James Redfield.
James, one of the aspects of this book is that a lot of the words of God, as they're portrayed here in Conversations with God, are at odds with the religious doctrine and dogma of many of the religious institutions. What about that dichotomy?
Well, I think that it's really just indicative of where we are. I think that for so long, spiritual thought has been held in dogma. Maybe the culture could not hold it any other way. But I think at this point, we are shifting away from the dogma. The germ of truth is moving away from some of the older, more fundamental institutions of religion into the great dialogue that we're having, the great conversation, in my view, where we're testing out for ourselves what to believe about spirituality, because we will find the evidence for it experientially. In the face of this grand conversation and the energy shifting over into the conversation, the religious institutions then have to evolve themselves and shift the dogma back toward the truth that I think is being defined popularly.
James, there's a quote in the book I want to recite here for you and get your comment on it. The deepest secret is that life is not a process of discovery, but a process of creation. Do you agree with that?
I think there's a semantic problem right there. But essentially, I think what is being conveyed in the Conversations with God is that this is nothing that we're to discover as though we did not already have it. In other words, the living the spiritual life is really creating in the sense of engaging the experience. And I think in that sense, it's very, very true. I think that in another way, it feels like discovery. It feels like self-discovery. But I think we do have to keep in mind that it's that we're really not just discovering, we're remembering. We're trying to open up to that which we always have been.
Taking that a little further, one of the things that permeates Conversations with God is the idea and the concept of we create our own reality. You create your own reality. What is your perspective? Do we create our own reality?
Well, I think that I really think what's being said here is that we all create the reality. And so while we personally are responsible for much of what happens to us personally, also what happens to us personally is the result of what everybody else is creating out there and all the interfaces that happen. And I definitely think that that's true. That's why to say that you're absolutely creating everything that happens to you is, to me, too strict. But to say that you are involved, you're co-creating everything that happens to you, I think is very close to the truth. But the main point in that, I think, is that it's not so much what happens to us as how we react to what happens to us, because that's that way we can make sure that if we react positively from a sense of love, then we are doing everything we can to keep our path on a positive track.
I think you brought out a salient point here that it's not only recreating our own reality, but creating our own reality in the midst of many other realities being created by others. And this would explain or be a response to the critique that comes up about, well, did I create my cancer? Did I create my ill health? What about that? I mean, isn't that true?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if we have to take responsibility for our part of it always. But I think we also live within a particular social reality that influences not only how we think, but influences the level of healthiness around us. So I think that our mission really is to not only to continue to project the positive personally, but also to be able to interact and hold on to this positive when we interact with others, because that helps them turn their creative energy around into the positive as well, which is another point I think he made very clearly in here, and that is the essence of relating is the act of forgiveness.
Another thing about that's talked about a lot in the book is that we create the devil and we create hell and we also create heaven. What about that?
Well, I think that's, I would call that the 10th insight. We are to a place where we realize that the highest part of ourselves is that all-knowing God self that that truly evaluates how we're doing. And so we have to ultimately face how we've lived our lives, how we've created, how it has turned out. And if we feel disappointed in aspects of that life, it'll be us, it'll be ourselves that create that disappointment. If we are so cut off from the force of love that is who we are, that we're in total fear, it is hellish. And that's the definition of hell, is when we're so cut off that we are in that space instead of in a love space that has the connection with the divine.
At some point in the book, there wasn't a comparison or an equation of fear with hell, that when we're in fear, we're out of love, and that can be a hellish situation.
No, absolutely. I just think that's the recognition that we're having out there. I called it the 10th insight because I think that's the insight that's circulating through the culture right now. We know there's no other judgment that's going to happen to us about our lives other than the one that we impose and the greater part of us imposes. So I think there's a sense of awareness and an imperative too, I think, that to go out and live our lives taking all the risks that we want, that we think we need to go for it all, to try to create at our highest level and take all the risks associated with that, because we know that we are going to feel responsible later on as to how well we've done it, and we're going to want to do it as well as we can.
James, one of the questions that came up for me was the reference to feelings as an indicator and a channel for truth. And I'm wondering about, are we talking about levels of feelings? Because feelings have been the cause of wars and conflicts for millennia. And so what about that idea of feelings being a channel for the truth?
Well, I took that to mean that inwardly, once we get past the negative feelings that maybe distract us, but that once we get clear that we have an inward feeling as to what is truth and what is not truth, and of course that's somewhat relative to our own situation, but each of us, I think, knows intuitively which move to make at any juncture in our lives. Now, we don't always do it because we rationalize it or we fall into fear about it and we can't really make the move. But at our highest level, if we can get to that, we know what to do and when to do it and what to say in every circumstance. We're guided. I mean, we have that higher self intuitive guidance at that level once we can find it within our own experience.
So in some sense, when you're talking about inward, you're really talking about going deeper to the deeper level of our feelings, right?
That's the way I would look at it, yes. There are all kinds of emotions that run through our experience. It can be the jealousy and irritation and hatred and all the rest. But I think that those we know now are... come from a place of fear, not a place of love. And if there's something we know, I think, here in the 90s, if we're really going to live our true spirituality, we have to stay in a space of love. First of all, we have to find that for ourselves and define it. And then we always have to come back to this space of love, this state of being that we know as love. And you can abstractly debate philosophy and religion and dogma all you want to, but nothing matters except coming back to that state and that space of love. And I think that's one thing that has come into popular consciousness at this point.
So there's a quote in the book that follows up on what you just said. The highest thought is always that thought which contains joy. The clearest words are those words which contain truth. The grandest feeling is that feeling which you call love, joy, truth, and love. That's pretty much echoing what you just said.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that we really know now that there is an experience out there that's available to us. We don't want to just talk about it. We don't want to think about it. We don't want to just debate about it. We want to go for it and experience that ourselves. And that's going to change everything because we are finally getting to the level of experience with all this. I always like to say that we've got a new image that's emerging out in the culture of what the good life is. The good life is to find that space of love, that space of joy, that space of euphoria almost, because from that comes all the other things that we associate with fulfillment, like a sense of mission, a sense of making the world a better place, a sense of having good, positive relationships, knowing how to parent, all the rest. It all flows from staying in that space, and I think we know that now.
James, a lot of people are feeling pessimistic and cynical and not really hopeful or optimistic about the future. And one of the quotes in the book that I'd like you to comment on is, "I tell you this, all you see in your world is the outcome of your idea about it." What is your comment on that statement?
Well, I think that's absolutely true and of so immense importance right now. The ideas we have about how we can turn the course of the world around, how we can make it more positive, how we can solve our social and environmental problems, the ideas that we project about that are going to create the state of the future. And, I think that we've reached a point where we now know how powerful we are in terms of our ideas and our visualization of the future. And I think it's got to be that understanding that carries us through right now. We cannot just fall back into this fear reaction that the world is doomed, that can't be saved, because I really believe that all the heroes are in place, as I've said many times, that we can, all the people who need to intervene in all our social problems are already there. All we have to do is connect with this, the divine guidance and the courage, just everybody making a move at once can change the world literally overnight.
James, what was the most impressive aspect of Conversations with God for you?
Well, I really liked the foundation it was built upon, the basic principles that were voiced in the book. A couple of sentences that I really loved had to do with heaven, and I think the answer that God gave was, there is no such thing as getting to heaven. There is only a knowing that you're already there. And, this whole the whole theme of remembering, I think, is just so important for us at this time. It's something, again, that I believe is emerging in the culture now, this awareness that, hey, we are spiritual beings. We always have been, and all we have to do is open up to it and remember it, and then our lives can change very, very dramatically.
So if you had something to share with people as to what they could do in these times, what would it be, James?
Well, I think what I like to say is that each of us has to find our own experience of the divine. We have to have that experience whereby we become more than we were. We have a transcendent experience where our bodies feel different. We feel like a full or more complete person. We are imbued with a kind of energy that the mystics have always talked about as being transforming. And people find that in different ways. They find it in the churches and synagogues, in prayer. They find it in meditation. But we also find it in dance and in body work and in the martial arts. And we find it in visiting sacred sites on this planet. You know, there's an inspiring energy that certain locations can give us. And I think I would say that the first chore in the 90s is to go out and find that transcendent experience, because of everything else springs from that sense of being part of the divine and having the source within that the mystics have always talked about.
James, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate your taking the time.
Thank you, Michael.